We're back to Neil Haley's show, and I'm first excited to welcome my co-host, Cowboy 347, Damon Harper. Damon, how are you, man? I know you're excited about our guest today.
Oh, man, I'm super excited. Nicholas, thank you for your time. Extremely grateful. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, so our guest today is Nicholas Tanna. He's going to talk about a bunch of different things in his career in Hollywood to now with his IT company and his new book. Nicholas, thanks for stopping by. So kind of tell me, what was the first thing, entrepreneurship or really being involved in the game of Hollywood and stuff? What was first?
I started more pursuing writing, directing, music, career in the arts. And one of my first jobs was as an intern, paid intern for Arizona State University. I worked for PBS. And I did everything literally starting on like putting makeup on people all the way. It was a kind of a cool internship. They had us do every single part, right? So you eventually work your way up to directing. And that's how I broke in and originally started, with the goal of which I really fell in love with the 90s filmmaking scene. And I love the idea of marrying my love of writing with my love of music into directing films, moving pictures.
He's a definitely creative cowboy. Go ahead with your first question for him.
So like, just from like your education, right, the sweat equity on your journey, right, regarding your skill set of writing and your experience in Hollywood, post-production, pre-production development, that whole process, how did you happen to correlate, right, the scalability, right, into your skill set of writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think writing's about communication, and writing's about being able to understand what's the message or the problem or something to be solved, right? And right. And so that ability to think, actually, and organize one's thoughts, I developed at an early age. I mean, I was an English major in college too, so you really learn how to study writing and analyze arguments and debates. Right. Interestingly enough, so I was able to bring that to everything I do in terms of business, connecting, communicating, and that skill set, interestingly enough, I think is going to diminish with time, because now we have tools that can do the surface writing for right. you and organize for you. So the ability of one's own mind and be able to organize one's thoughts and arguments and put things together and make connections, that's going to diminish with time. Fortunately, I built those skill sets over a long period of time, and I can bring that to the table.
Now, that's important, because, again, that's where I'm very creative in ways as well, Nicholas, so that my brain, the way it works, is specifically I'm an idea guy. Now with AI, and we'll talk about this later in this conversation, I have changed the way I think. And that's smart, because a lot of people can't scratch the surface with AI. They only go to the beginning, where it's so much more. And that's where you and I as creatives say, okay, we want to go deeper. We want to go deeper, our thoughts. And as a writer, that's the deepness that you were. So when you were doing that writing and marrying all those different things in Hollywood, how did you break in? What was that way to kind of get in the door? So you had to be sell yourself, just like directors have to sell themselves as much as actors do. That's just a different way of doing it, right?
Yeah, well, when I did it, it was different, right? Although it's probably still the same in a sense. There's sort of this insular community and there's gatekeepers. When I did it, I already went to school and I was able to get an internship through an essay competition I won. So I initially got some experience working in television for school. When I graduated, though, even with all this experience, I was an honors graduate. I spoke several languages. I could not get a job, right? I could not. It was a really hard time, too. It was just like sending the resume out the typical way. People weren't responding to me. What I actually did was I took a job at Kelly Temp Services, temping in the HR department at ESPN. Wow. At the time. Now, mind you, ESPN was located in Bristol, Connecticut, where I happened to have gone to high school too. So I even had that home, you know, person from there, you know, thing. I had a lot of angles. I had TV experience, you know, and I still had a hard time. They weren't calling me. They weren't writing me back. Taking that temp job, I'm hanging out with the HR person, and we're literally stuffing envelopes for some entertainment thing that was happening, or some Christmas party thing that was going to happen. And I'm like, look, I told her the same spiel. I'm like, I have all this experience. I've put my resume in. Like, who are you taking? Like, if you're not taking me, like, why am I not a viable candidate? I'm looking for an entry level job. And she said, I'll say this now because it's been years. Honestly, you didn't hear this from me, but you got to know somebody. And so I said, well, I know you. Right. And we just spent a good 8 hours stuffing envelopes. There's nothing like doing that to get in the trenches with someone, you know, and to talk personal. And of course, she's like, well, do you have a resume on you? I'm like, and that's when you actually had hard, you know, paper resumes. I said, actually, I do. And I brought my resume out and I showed her my resume. I got a call the next day, landed a job within 3 days. And that's how I kind of got in and started. And I remember thinking how funny that was, because years later, someone asked me, he was like, who did you know to get in here? And I said, well, there's a story. I knew someone in HR.
when it comes to, right, the systematic process of developing your content, what is like the self-gratifying way to always make sure that you're empathizing, right, with your client avatar, or, you know, a certain demographic that, you know, that you're feeding the solutions to regarding the problems?
I mean, for me, you're asking a question of how do you empathize, sort of, right? Like how, because that is the key. That right. Human quality of empathy is something that is not so valued. It is surfacely, but not really, right? I think for years, our society has revered machines and computers and all the amazing things they can do, which for good reason, right? But they're super calculators. I mean, the reality is they don't have the ability to empathize. Neither does AI, right? Despite some of the new groundbreaking stuff MIT is doing with emotional AI and other things that are not really being talked about. So I think that ability to empathize is a very human quality that we underrate. And unfortunately, in our society, with our rush to get things done and to get produced and bottom line, and a very narcissistic tendency to kind of focus on the self and the rugged individual, which has always been a part of our American culture, versus the community and others around us, we've really lost respect for that empathy. And empathy, really putting others first in some ways, or at least recognizing them as equal, really, really kind of understanding the problem from another person's perspective. The old cliche of putting yourself in someone else's shoes is underrated and undervalued. But if one does that really, really well, not only do you establish really good relationships, but yes, you can predict and imagine and plan for solutions to people's problems, right?
So. Right.
And that's key to do that. So let's talk, because again, we don't have a lot of time. Let's go right into your latest project and talking about, again, E-Junkie and how that all started. How did it go? How did you do that?
Yeah, E-Junkie, sci-fi noir set in a future world where we've actually eliminated pain and suffering through emotional regulation devices. You can actually see people's emotions with colors on this apparel that people wear. So it's like the old movies, wow. 80s mood rings, you know, if you're wearing those. And the idea is that this helps to regulate and create peace. And, you know, it makes the world a better place, right? This is like the Silicon Valley cliche. And so if you do make the world a better place and you're able to eliminate pain and suffering, is it truly a better place? Or did we just exchange one solution or one, you know, to create another problem, right? With every solution comes new problems. And so there's this other group in this story called the Guardians of Pain, who actually believe we need pain and suffering as part of the human experience to grow, to evolve. And so they have curated the most painful moments in human history through DNA scraping of corpses. And they're able to take that memory and they're selling it in a form of a drug to people on the market called Torch. And it's starting a revolution because the people in the society don't know this history of themselves. They don't know this, I mean, from all kinds of horrible moments, like from the Holocaust to like the Salem witch trials, et cetera, throughout human history. And So the group that's in charge, the Guardians of the World Corporation Organization, which is like a conglomerate of all corporations, there's no more nations in my futuristic imagining world. They hire this detective to stop the Guardians of Pain before it starts a revolution. And that's E-Junkie. And it's just been an inspiration from a number of experiences in life. And it's Simon & Schuster's putting it out, and I'm excited to see it out there.
Just to promote, right, and campaign right now, what is the most prevalent message that, you know, readers can pick up on in the stopping, right? Right, in the stopping regarding the conglomerate, well, there's no conglomerates or nations in your futuristic thinking, but what is the most prevalent, you know, message that they could pick up on regarding the stopping? Not to give too much, but just to campaign the story, E-Junkie.
What do you mean, the stopping of pain and suffering?
Well, yes.
Yeah. So the question becomes, like, if you look at the opioid crisis, you look at a lot of the things in our society right now, like just everything that we use to escape, escapist entertainment, right? You know, everything we do, why do we do all these things we do in life? Like, what is driving us, right?
Adrenaline. To get that adrenaline rush, to get that
why do we feel that adrenaline rush is necessary? That anxiety, that because that's a level of suffering. We don't necessarily recognize.
It is.
But the dopamine, but the dopamine feeling when the first of anything, it rushes you and you want that all the time.
Yeah, you kind of do. But like if you drink coffee and you get that rush, you feel like you got that rush. But then all of a sudden, eventually it goes away. Then you got to do something else to get another rush, right? Like, can you sustain a rush forever? And if you do, then how would you ever know what a rush feels like?
I don't know. So this is what's interesting is, well, then with the e-junkie thing is, why would you want pain and suffering? The adrenaline rush we get is not pain and suffering. I mean, I can debate you with this, and I don't think that the case of let's say you have $0 in the bank, right? And you have to get this sale today. And I've lived there, done it, and where I have a t-shirt to prove it. I think everyone in this room right now has learned it in one way. Where that rush, and okay, we finally made it. And it's what a rush. But I don't like that freaking pain and suffering before that.
Yeah, but the question is, what is the pain and suffering? So if you really think about what is the pain,
so think of what Tony Robbins talks about, the uncertainty that Tony Robbins talks about.
Okay, so you're saying the pain and suffering comes from uncertainty of what? Like survival? That you're not going to have money to survive and put food on the table? And, and is that really what pain and suffering is coming from?
Yeah.
Okay, because I got news for you. The moment you're born, you're going to die. Newsflash.
Yeah, that's not, maybe not true. That could be not true if you look at sci-fi.
Well, there are people that will argue it, and there's cryogenic chambers and all this technology.
No, all the things like in that sleeves in that one show, I forget what movie, TV, if sci-fi is becoming sci-fact now, man.
Okay, but let's put it this way. Let me humor you and say that's not true. Let me humor you and say that we can be like vampires and live forever. Do you think that would end your pain and suffering?
No.
Why?
Because you would always an unknown of something that would really disappoint you.
Where does that come from?
That comes from anxiety. That comes from
that's the byproduct.
Oh wow.
The unknown.
So if you really think about it, where does that suffering come? You gotta ask it for yourself, but I'm gonna give you a hint.
Okay.
Self-grasping. We all want something that isn't necessarily what we have. And the moment we feel we need something else, we're not happy.
Yes.
So just seeking happiness is a setup for failure, because this moment you're going to try to get it.
You see, so happy. I could debate you on that.
I love it.
I could debate you on that, Nicholas. And you got Mr. Mindfulness-based therapist in here. Yeah, too. I don't know, Nicholas. This is where you're going to get in a little bit of a great conversation about this that we didn't expect, right? So okay, so I'm going to give you my take, and I'm going to get Damon's take, and then you're going to go back to you based on your book, because we're not here to not say don't read your book, because we,
of course,
that's going to lead to more of a conversation you ever thought with two of us. Yes. I have been going through healing process of a breakup, and I am really into the law of attraction. And people can say, go screw you, that you, Neil, you're nuts on this. But honestly, I believe and that we can reprogram our brains and reprogram the way we think and all these different things. And I've been going through hypnotherapy through the law of attraction and things, certain specific things, and how we can look at negative thoughts that come in our brain throughout the day and how we can kind of change the way we think to create happiness all the time. You know, Tony Robbins believes this. And I wonder what your thoughts with Tony Robbins are. So my belief, I would say no. I would say that we can create that type of a situation. We're going to go through hardship. We're going to go through trials. But we can really create the positive in that. So if we didn't have any sadness, any unhappiness as in your book, I think that we wouldn't be bored people. But that's why it needs to become a movie. But go ahead, Damon, with your thoughts, Nicholas, saying that you can't create that.
So like we're having cloth talk. So let me approach. So is manifestation, right, a form, right, of unhealthy, you know, is it an unhealthy habit because we're constantly putting ourselves in a state of suffering, right?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I would say yes.
Mm.
I mean, I think it's interesting because I've read create a visualization. And I know I'm going to be very unpopular here, right? Because
that's good. That's okay. I like that because that's what's fun. It's a form of debate.
But yeah. I'm going to tell you the truth as I feel it and have experienced it. And I have some serious tragic stuff that's happened in my life. And I've been able to move that through and sublimate it through art to some extent. Doesn't necessarily take it away. But I can tell you that I do feel that I used to think and I used to try all that stuff. But, you know, really intrinsic in that is this feeling that you're not good enough with who you are at the moment, in the moment.
Right.
That there's always this level of something you believe you need to manifest and need to be happy. I can tell you right now, Tony Robbins isn't happy. He may say he is. He may smile, but that doesn't mean you're happy. We know that, right? I could be smiling and sad right now, and you could fake it all day, right? They say fake it.
Oh, so that I need to get Tony to meet you. I don't know if you've met him, Nicholas. Have you ever met Tony?
I have not, but I would have a lot of things to say to Tony if he'd hear me out. But I don't think anyone as driven as Tony is happy per se. And it's not to say drive is bad, but he
wants dopamine in his body every second.
He does. Yeah. What is happiness? Because they say that, right? Because time gives us a sense of urgency. Because like the limited amount of time that we have gives us a sense of urgency to love, to find passion, to accomplish or whatever you may, you know, want to look at, however you want to look at it. So what is happiness with like the fact that there's beauty in the sense of urgency, right? Or is the knowing, right? Is knowing happiness? Because if you know, right, that time is limited, right? And that gives you the sense of urgency to find love, to find your passion work, to find friends, to stay healthy, or to, you know, set goals. Is that happiness?
Well, I mean, it depends on your goals, but I definitely think if you have a sense of urgency, that underlying anxiety is not necessarily a form of happiness. Can it be virtuous? Can it be something that results in good things for you? Depends. It could be. Well, yeah. The fact that we have a finite life makes us live our life in a certain way that's more meaningful, then that's wonderful. Right.
Right.
but if it creates an anxiety, that means that we're going to make life choices that step on other people or create this survivalistic mindset. That means we're actually not finding real happiness. We're just exchanging one problem for another. Then no, I don't think it's going to bring you happiness.
So that's a great point because it will come back. All right. So Nicholas, the thing that I find this has got to be a movie. Is that a chance at one point?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, I can't say that some pretty big players in Hollywood are taking a look at it right now and making that consideration. Obviously, with the strikes, we might not see any movement for a little bit. But for now, I'm focused on the book and it's coming out and I'm really proud of it. There's a prescient chapter on the fall of Hollywood in it. It kind of ties in with the plot in a way. It starts with the unions too. there's a lot of interesting, timely things. And I think, you know, it's entertaining and fun and all that. But at the same time, I do think there's an important message there. There's a sociopolitical message underlying this story. And I think, you know, I think the best sci-fi and horror, especially ones that combine the two like this, can give us that. Because we go in open enough to say, hey, I want that thing. I want that entertainment. I want something to make me have fun, you know, heal my pain. And then all of a sudden, like, wow. It gets us off that roller coaster for a second. We start to question our own existence and our own choices. I think the best art does that. And I guess that's why I take the time to do it, because I'm hoping to kind of help with that and reflect on this world we live in, this all mysterious, crazy world we're all sharing together, and reflect it through story.
Yeah. You definitely need to call out Tony Robbins, and that could be another way to get the book. Maybe tweet him out. Maybe thread him, because threads, he might respond.
The thing is, in all honesty, it's not a thread. I think I'm sure he's doing marvelous things or trying to do marvelous things.
Thread, you know, not threat.
I just don't necessarily think, to answer your question, I think, if he didn't have an anxiety or something underneath his motivation, then I don't know if he'd quite be as motivated as he is.
No, I said a thread, not a threat, a thread. So thread,
thread. Okay, much different.
Thread them out because thread will respond.
Well, it's funny though, man, because we use words like disrupt and all these like really hardcore worlds and beat the competition. Like we do look at in a capitalist society as it's us or them, right? Like there can only be so many winners in a poker game. But you know, once you get really good at that and you've got all the money and no one else has the money at the table, you can't play poker, right?
Right.
And that's what tends to happen in a corporatocracy, right? Like you've got a few monopolies and then you've got no one left. And then next thing you know, everyone's like, what's the difference between that and socialism?
Nothing at all. All right. So Nicholas, best place people can find your book is where?
Right now, well, there's Amazon and Barnes & Noble, pretty much anywhere books are still sold. You could also always call your local bookstore, support your local bookstore or comic book shop, either one. Say, hey, I'd like E-Junkie, you know, and order it through there. They can get it for you.
All right. We appreciate it, Nicholas. Thanks for stopping by.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much.
You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.